You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly show with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today we are talking about secondary papers. Yes, these papers that you do once you're done with your primary paper, and what makes a good one. So stay tuned for this discussion. And now, some music. I've been working on such secondary papers for a very, very long time, and I think they are so much fun. And you can make them really extraordinary, and you can do lots of great things about it. And so stay tuned for this one. I am producing that podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. And this association has a special interest group, the Launch and Lifecycle Special Interest Group, that speaks a lot about these kind of things. So if you're working in the space and you're working a lot of these kind of secondary publications, then check out the six that might be really of interest for you. Head over to psiweb.org to learn more about such PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today again with Benjamin. Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, very well. How are you, Alexander?
Very good. It's a nice spring day here. And so, yeah, good mood.
Lucky you. It's a nice winter day over here. Gray and windy. So,
yeah. But we are not talking about the weather today. Today we are talking about secondary papers. First, maybe to talk about what actually is a secondary paper. So
yeah, today, you know, actually today I'm you know, I'm very interested in the topic as well, because to be honest, I've never come across a secondary paper myself. So it's quite an interesting topic. So it's kind of, I'll try to interview you, Alexander, because from my side, like working as CRO for my whole working life, it's, you know, I supported quite a bit of publications in the past, but this has been not on secondary papers. So this has been primarily on primary papers, meaning that for the original contents of it. So actually, yeah. So my question, maybe I can make a start in asking you, what actually is a secondary paper, Alexander?
So the typical primary paper, yeah, contains all the primary analysis, you know, the primary endpoint analysis, the key secondaries, the safety analysis, the key facts. And it really contains all these kind of typical, most important pre-specified analysis. And so that paper, of course, kind of writes largely itself. Maybe, you know, medical writers would disagree, but content-wise, it's largely written by itself based on the pre-specified analysis. Yeah, you have lots of the content already in the protocol or in the study report. And of course, it always needs a little bit of fine-tuning here and there. And there's, of course, always the typical things that will come from external authors in terms of additional questions, and from the peer review process, you will have additional things. But largely, kind of, it is, you know, why you did the study in the first place. Yeah, so the key topics, why you did the study.
When I just think about the process and how the analysis at the end is developed, it usually starts with the protocol, obviously. So where you say why we have what is more the focus than on the primary paper. So, but when it gets to SAP writing, for example, isn't it that there's already like a lot of ideas being added? So if it's reviewed by other parties, usually just remember like, you know, subgroups or MAS and, you know, other things, just out of interest, which are usually at least mentioned in the clinical study report as well, but not dived into. So is this then more the typical context yeah. of the secondary paper?
Yes, that is very often where secondary papers start. And of course, you know, depending on the study, you might have many, many different secondary papers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So imagine you have, let's say, a 3-year study. Yeah. That runs over 3 years. But your primary analysis is maybe after 3 months. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, everything that comes after this first readout, you know, are all kind of secondary papers.
Yeah.
Or you maybe you have a, you're working in a disease area where there's lots of different questionnaires and assessments done. Yeah. And it's far too much to put all into one paper. Yeah. So you focus your primary paper on the most important ones, and there's still lots of data available for secondary papers. Or as you said, you know, there might be specific subgroups that are of interest, or there might be specific topics. Yeah. Like there's maybe a specific safety aspect that you want to dive deeper into. Mm. Or there is maybe you want to speak specifically about, let's say, how fast the drug works. Yeah. Mm. Or you want to explore further into certain endpoints. Like maybe, you know, you have a specific endpoint that you have first used after it got validated in the study, and you want to kind of dive deeper into these kind of things. So there's, you know, depending on the disease areas, there may be many, many, many different.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily that the idea is written down prior to the analysis. It's also things that you do afterwards, like ad hoc ideas you brainstorm together with others and then find out interesting findings in the results, etc.
Yeah, usually it's kind of a combination of certain analysis that you already have done. Yeah, mm-hmm. Usually you have already some kind of summary statistics or kind of, you know, overall analysis, but not specifically all the analysis that you need. Yeah, mm-hmm. So there is usually much more kind of going backwards and forwards from it. Also kind of ideas come from all kind of different places during the strategic publication planning. Yeah, maybe there's an idea coming from, oh, we would like to have this specific subgroup a paper about because that is a subgroup that is important for reimbursement. Yeah, or maybe there's a question, like I said, about a specific side effect that is coming up. Don't know, something that you haven't expected, like maybe there's some kind of skin side effect and you want to dive deeper into it, kind of, you know, what are the patients that are mostly affected? When does it happen? How is it treated? What kind of co-medications do these patients have? All kind of different things that you could, you know, never put into a primary paper, yeah, just to the sheer volume of all the different analysis, and that you put in a specific one, yeah. And so that's for often kind of content for these typical secondary papers.
So, I mean, when brainstorming about where this comes from, it's quite obvious that the approach that we have and you know, working and deriving like a primary paper doesn't work. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, consorts. Why is that not fitting then?
Well, consort is, for those who don't know, is basically a guideline for how to report papers, and it's really targeted towards these primary papers. Yeah, it talks about all the, you know, mention all the pre-specified endpoints and all these kind of different things. You need to talk about sample size and all these different things. Yeah, this is not so relevant for a secondary endpoint. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can, a secondary paper, you can very easily refer to lots of the content, yeah, to the primary paper. Yeah, you don't need to rewrite the complete, you know, study description and everything. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you can just cite and say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also refer to the primary paper.
Refer to the primary paper, yeah. That's why it's sometimes a little bit tricky to submit these when the primary paper is not yet published. Yeah. So, but then at least maybe you can cite a poster, or, you know, cite clinicaltrials.gov or cite something else. Yeah. Where, so that you don't need to, you know, have too much space wasted for describing lots of stuff that is actually not so relevant to this paper. Yeah.
But I mean, if you design a study and you have like a primary, the primary idea behind it and put in this in a primary paper, I mean, I know that there must be a lot of like an audience waiting for it, for whatever reason. I mean, could be, you know, the success of a drug, could be submission whatsoever. So what is then the, you know, what is the challenge then in actually writing a secondary paper? And if it's not as obvious and pre-planned as we have for the primary endpoints or the key endpoints?
Yeah. So the first challenge is to develop a really good story. Yeah. So for the primary paper, it's easy because the story is already basically the story of the study itself. Yeah, it's written in the protocol, why you need the study and all these kind of different things. Yeah. So it's pretty straightforward. But here you need to write, you know, come up with a new story. Yeah. Let's say you want to speak about how fast your drug works. Yeah. And then you can talk about it in terms of, okay, what does that mean for the patient? Yeah. What does it mean for the physician if the drug works fast rather than slow? Yeah? And what kind of additional benefits will that have? And then you can further expand on the story. Okay, so, and we can see with this new treatment that, you know, it's specifically fast. That also reflects on, you know, I don't know, maybe less dropouts due to a lack of efficacy. It leads to, you know, better overall symptom response over the first couple of months or whatsoever, and then conclude kind of this is a specific feature of this new treatment, and then you can compare it to other existing compounds, yeah, and say it's better than, you know, it looks better than this one and that one, put the usual strengths and limitations, and then you have your paper. Yeah, and that then helps you to answer a specific question that you have.
I think the challenge really starts if this is like an unexpected or maybe like a controversial story, then to the overall, you know, to the primary paper or like the overall protocol. So did that happen to you, that you basically found out that this is your secondary paper was suddenly like a, I wouldn't say like not a success, but something that completely unexpected?
Both. Yeah. So sometimes you can, you know, anticipate quite a lot. Mm. Yeah. Like the topics that I mentioned with the patient reported outcome that is used the first time. Yeah. So you know that this will be an interesting topic. Yeah. From a scientific perspective, it will also be an interesting topic from a reimbursement perspective to have, you know, sufficient data to show that, you know, that actually, you know, is a valid endpoint, these kind of things. So these are kind of, you know, pretty, you can pretty well define such kind of things. But there's others, like, you know, with the side effect, yeah, that you haven't thought so much about, yeah? And now this becomes much more of a topic and you need to dig deeper into it. Mm. The key here is also for these kind of, let's say, more difficult ones, you need to make sure that they are aligned to your overall strategy. Mm. Yeah? So in terms of overall strategy, if you do good strategic publication planning, that follows strategy that is based on the overall compound strategy. Yeah. And this compound strategy speaks about what are the key differentiators of this new treatment? What are the key patient populations you want to go for? What are the key aspects you want to highlight? What are, you know, specific differences versus the competition? What are needs that you need to have from a reimbursement, from a marketing perspective, from a regulatory perspective? All these things are kind of part of the overall strategy. Yeah. And then, of course, you need to make sure that your papers align with this overall strategy. Yeah. And you first work on all the things that help support this overall strategy. Yeah. So if, for example, is speed of onset is important, then, well, don't shift that to, you know, the 10th paper, have it early on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. These kind of things. It's also that you're kind of consistent in terms of how you phrase things across different papers. Yeah. So say, for example, your terminology you use in the primary paper and then the secondary paper is consistent to some extent. Yeah.
But that might be tricky. I mean, in terms of keeping an eye on this, because often there are many parties involved, and this might be taken back to, let's say, academic centers or, you know, companies or different groups within the company because of the focus of it. So that is something, then they're working in parallel, maybe they're involving you, maybe not. So this is indeed like a challenge if you don't have the overall control about, you know, over the terminations, over the stories, over especially also over the frequency or maybe the order of when things being published and where, because sometimes it's more like a statistical side, sometimes it's more like a, you know, oncology paper or publication. So whatever it is,
But you know, I mean, one of the main things, for example, is that you're consistent in terms of certain definitions, for example. Yeah. So you shouldn't have in one paper, let's say 151 patients that you're analyzing, and then the next one 149. Yeah.
Yep.
Or you have, you know, you look into kind of a certain group of side effects and you define them based on certain, I don't know, SOCs or PTs or whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have one setup in one paper and a different setup in the other paper, but you call it the same. Yeah.
Yep.
These kind of things, you know, there you need to be consistent. Yeah. But or of course, in terms of other things, you need to be flexible. Yeah.
But also, you know, it could be consistent or could be that you very well explain this in the paper, what you did. So why the number changed. Yeah. So I know that I have been through these discussions where, you know, not for the papers, but for the decision of maybe how to group adverse events of interest, of special interest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a wide range. Some people say, well, yes, you take this PT in combination with the onset of the adverse event, and others say, well, only if it's like this, and then so it's a very, very strong, but that's why it's very important to have especially the statistician looking over this and make sure that there's a consistency throughout the different papers.
These, let's say, not trial specific but maybe compound specific analysis plans come into place. Yeah, so that you have certain definitions really consistent across all the different studies, across all the different publications and things like this.
Yeah, but then that requires that the authors read the SAP.
Well, it requires collaboration. I know that's, you know, it's easier said than done. Yeah. Especially if there's, you know, big organizations and, you know, lots of different departments that not necessarily work easily together. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and also if, like, I know this from medics, like if they have a long history of defining things differently than you do in the company. You know, and then they run and they drive, it's their key publication. You know, they may or may not agree to the SEP. Right. So
yeah, and that is a really important thing. Yeah, working with the co-authors, especially the ones that are outside of the company, is really, really crucial here. Yeah, it's very important to have, you know, let's say you have five external co-authors. Yeah, it's very important to have kind of a strategy for how you work with them. Yeah. One could be, for example, that the five get some kind of hierarchy and they agree among each other, who's the primary, co-author, kind of, you know, the lead co-author, and takes responsible for all the different things. And then kind of also in terms of doubt makes the decisions. Yeah. Because otherwise you can get lots of kind of conflicting feedback and never get it resolved.
But yeah. If you have five papers and five different authors, while the others are co-authors and everyone is the primary author is then taking the decisions, you have five different definitions. So that's a challenge.
Yeah. But then that's where kind of the flexibility comes into place. Yeah. So if you absolutely there's a need for kind of different things, then at least highlight it. Yeah. That you said, okay, here we define skin irritations in this way. And in this other paper, we have to find it in a different way, whatsoever. Yeah. So, or here do we think about pre-treatment specifically in terms of all these. And in some other paper, you know, for whatever reason, you have pre-treatment defined in other ways. Yeah. And of course, there's always, you know, certain reasons for these, but you need to be at least then transparent with these.
Okay, well, now we kind of talked a lot about what the differences are and maybe the challenges, especially in the planning. But what actually are maybe ideas of what to consider when you actually write the secondary paper? So is there any guideline? Is there anything that you can or that you learned was a good way to apply?
So one of the structures that I often use and that has helped quite a lot is the 3x3 structure.
Okay.
It's you basically have 3 points that you want to bring across in your paper. And you mention these 3 times. In the introduction, you say, we will talk about A, B, and C. Then in the results, you show here's A, B, and C. And the discussion you said, and to summarize, this paper shows A, B, and C. Yeah. And that's a really, really nice and easy structure that helps you to focus the paper. Yeah. There's when you do presentations, for example, there's very often kind of the rule of three. Yeah. Bring 3 key takeaways. Yeah. Mention 3 ideas whatsoever. This in all kind of different stories, there's always the 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the 3 nephews of Donald Duck. It's not 2 or 4, it's 3. Yeah. And in the same way, you can use your paper. And that helps you to structure it very well.
Yeah. And I think it's also easier to read.
Yes.
You know, because I remember reading papers and at the end you just ask, so what actually was shown here? So it's kind of
it's a data
B, but it's probably also about the yeah. All right. That's a good, and I think 3 is kind of a magic number here as well, because 3 is something which you can probably repeat yourself. I mean, it's easy to get 3 things and you keep it and you memorize it. And you know, if you're less than that, it's probably, you know, it's you need to put in more emphasis into the 2 items. So yeah. 3 is something like a number to take away. And then when it gets higher than 3, it's probably it's difficult, because then what is the message? It's to split apart. So I think 3 is a good number for this.
Yeah. If you have, and please remember these 13 points. Yeah, that's always also why we have 3-letter acronyms usually. Yeah. So the other really important thing about it is good graphics are really important. Yeah. So having again here 3 graphics that support your 3 main results is nice. And graphics are especially important because you want to stand out from the crowd. You want to bring your message across very crisp and fast. And these visualizations that you put into the paper will, you know, carry forward quite a lot beyond the paper. So, and you can actually, you know, take them from, let's say, earlier posters that you did. Yeah, because very often the secondary paper will have, you know, associated posters with it. And so for the poster, if you have a really good you know, data visualization that helps you to get your message across very, very fast. Same way, you know, you can adapt it then for the paper. And then thereafter, these papers are then used for presentations, by speakers at all different conferences, at internal events. They will be part of, let's say, HTA submissions. They will become part of promotional material. And the better you make your data visualization in this paper, the more likely all the other subsequent data visualizations or adaptations of it will also be right.
Well, I think this is a point which is probably not only true for secondary papers, but it has but it actually has a more, it's more important actually than in primary, than for primary papers, simply because, you know, what we mentioned before is that the interest for primary paper is higher even before you start. So that is something that there's this, you know, require, or that's people are waiting for to get the message from the primary. So that's, but they have been prepared very nicely through protocol, SAP, whatsoever. So the whole story of the study. So, but when it gets to the secondary paper, you have to have something which is eye-catching, right? So which is something putting the interest even more, because you have to create the interest more than for a primary paper. And that's why, even though the good graphics is always important, the, you know, the importance is even higher for secondary paper.
And often the concepts are not as easy as for the primary paper. So let's say in the primary paper, it's very often about just the treatment difference. But if you want to display kind of how, for example, AEs develop over time, that's a much more kind of trickier thing to have a look into. Or if you want to look into lots of different subgroups, that's a trickier thing. So invest more time in these kind of things to make it very, very crisp.
Yeah, and actually that brings me to another point is that, I mean, as I said, it's if you, you know, work on treatment groups and you plan the whole study on, you know, comparing A versus B, you know, you can, you know, your result is a p-value and it's good or not good. But that probably means that for secondary papers, you're often not successful in using just standard analysis that you pre-plan, because there isn't often nothing pre-planned.
Yes. So that is the other nice thing about it. Yeah. So whereas your primary paper is often very much driven by regulatory needs. You have, for the secondary paper, you have much more freedom. So you can use more advanced things, like, for example, doing, you know, different machine learning algorithms. Don't know, maybe you want to understand what are the patients that respond best. And you can do lots of different things around this. Or you want to understand, are there certain patterns in the data? And do, let's say, cluster analysis or other unsupervised learning techniques. Or you want to understand kind of, are there certain, you know, underlying concepts in your PRO? And you do some kind of latent class analysis. There's lots of really interesting things you can do here. And that's a little bit also the fun part about these papers. And my experience is these more interesting analysis, as well as the really, really nice graphics, help you to get it easier published. Once a medical writer told me that she really loves to work with me on the papers because it's much easier from the submission process to the journals. Instead of, you know, having this kind of ping pong to the journal, getting rejected, sending to the next journal, getting rejected again, sending to the next journal, you know, and over the period have lots of kind of backwards and forwards and peer review comments and so on. You get it faster accepted. And that is, of course, really important, not just from a timing perspective and from a workload perspective, but also first you usually target the higher ranked journals. And then you go to the lower impact factor ones. And so it also helps you to have this, you know, higher, so to say, credibility of the papers.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I haven't gone through the process yet. So that's what I was always What about, you know, any other thoughts? I mean, we touched the combination with, let's say, posters and, you know, upcoming publications, presentations, and what else would you recommend to consider and think about before or while writing like a secondary paper? Any other cross connection?
One of the things is that all these papers are now primarily used electronically. Yeah. Mm. So, and with these electronic versions, there are a couple of additional features that you can take into account. Of course, that is also for the primary paper, but I think especially for secondary papers, that is, makes it really nice. You have the electronic appendices where you can put additional data that, you know, doesn't fit into the original paper. Things like, you know, additional sensitivity analysis, maybe even things like additional data visualizations, yeah, animations, videos, all kind of different things. Yeah. Lots of journals are going in that direction that say maybe allow something like a short presentation to be attached to it. Yeah, someone that the primary author talks for 5 minutes about the paper in this presentation. Yeah. And so these kind of things can help you to make the publication more beneficial overall, more impactful overall. Mm. And everything that is in there is then also published, and then you can use it for further efforts, like in promotional material, in HTA submissions. Of course, that always depends on the local regulations, but there's a lot of benefits to having things published.
Yeah, I think that is a good point, because, you know, old school paper PDFs, simple way, it's, you know, it changed, and meaning that this advantage of electronic papers is just something you need to consider for any paper. But yeah.
And you also, you know, I've seen kind of interactive data visualizations in these. Mm. Yeah. So that you can check, okay, let's say, especially when you want to show lots of different subgroups or things like that. Yeah. Having something that is interactive is really, really nice. Or you have these more complex graphics, yeah, that you can have kind of a video that explains these kind of things in a better way. It also helps with being really transparent about all your data, yeah, and therefore it helps to build trust. So these are a couple of additional considerations to have for the paper.
No, makes sense. Any other advice? Anything else?
I think one of the main things is be very clear and crisp about what is your paper about and what is not your paper about. Yeah. I've seen lots of discussions going in circles because you weren't really crisp and clear about what is in the paper and what is outside of the paper. Yeah. Managing these expectations among all the different authors, in the study team, in the compound team, is really important. Yeah. Not just have these kind of titles. Oh, this is a paper about functioning. Yeah. Or this is a paper about safety, or this is a paper about rapid onset, whatsoever. Yeah. Yep. Things like where you can have thousands of different ideas about it, and then you go in circles. Yeah. Mm. Because, you know, all the different people had different expectations about it. And that can delay the process quite a lot and can lead to lots of frustration. So having a very, very crisp and clear plan at the beginning that is agreed by everybody helps a lot to move easy through the overall process and also to get to a good result early on. Yeah. So and then of course there it comes back to the overall strategic planning. Yeah. So that you have other papers where you can put all the different other ideas. Yeah. That people will always come up with, oh, this is a nice additional thing. Yeah. If you have a good publication plan, then you can say, yeah, but this is covered somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just saying, I mean, it makes sense, right? So, but what is the role of a statistician there?
The role of the statistician is working together with the medical writer, the physician, the other people to get to this crisp definition, but also to come up with good ideas. Yeah. If you see there's an opportunity, here is a very, very nice feature of the of our data that makes our drug stand out from the crowd. And we can best show it that way. Yeah, through these analysis, these graphics, kind of, yeah, bring these ideas forward. Statisticians, if they see themselves as drug developers, being statisticians and not statisticians that are kind of just the stats functional representative on the team, then, you know, you have the ability to really influence things and drive things and make sure that you have a consistent overall story.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. It is just that I think that is the challenge.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, we think, I mean, not number crunchers, but at least it's kind of where we come from originally, saying that is, but the function of a statistician is much more than that. It's more, it's the interlinking. And I mean, it sounds a little bit like, you know, we are talking now for statisticians, primarily statisticians, about, you know, writing papers. Actually, we are usually not writing papers. So we are working together with somebody who does medical writing and medics. And so that's kind of a combination of all. It's more the mindset. Well, you know, what we kind of agree upon is that the, you know, all the facts or all the advices that you just gave in terms of, you know, 3-3 rule, etc. So that is something we should keep in mind and bring in, even though we are not necessarily, you know, being the primary author of the study. Really, the input that where we need to kind of work with a whole group of, and now it gets back to the communication and the argumentation and, you know, bringing, you know, this for things to be the topics we touched before in our podcast, so coming in and bringing it all together. So I think it's a challenge. It's a challenge, especially this is not the, like, our, you know, our key responsibility in writing the paper, giving input. Yes, writing paper.
Actually, you know, in terms of writing the papers, there's a couple of different ways you can do this. What I found really helpful is if you have the medical writer, the main physician and the statistician together in a room, and you outline your paper. Yeah? You have kind of, you don't need to have full sentences there, yeah? But at least you have kind of bullet points. What are kind of the key things that we want to say here, here, here? Here we take kind of this, you know, the typical description from the protocol. Here we add this kind of data visualization. Here goes the stats part that is written by, you know, you. Here goes the kind of, here's the key conclusions that we want to have. Let's have a couple of bullet points for the strengths and limitations. And if you have that outline done together, and then kind of just the formulating nice sentences is done by the medical writer, you really write the paper together. Yeah. Instead of, you know, just throwing over the analysis to someone and then get them to plug them together in some shape or form for you to then critique it. I think the putting more effort at the beginning helps a lot to save time later on.
As always, probably.
As usual. Yeah. Good planning is everything. Not necessarily that the plan always works out, you know. Sometimes, you know, you see something that, well, there's some data aspect that you need to put some kind of additional thoughts on it, or there's kind of additional challenges from co-authors, or there's, you know, peer review comments, of course, always. Mm. Always. Well, nearly always. There's one paper that my team submitted that went through without a single comment. Was directly accepted.
It probably just oversaw it.
In 20 years. Okay, so we have talked now for quite a long time about secondary papers. And just let me summarize a couple of things of it. Secondary papers are really important, but they are very specific and different from the primary papers. As you, yeah, don't just have the typical consort following paper. You need to be very, very crisp and clear about the story that you want to tell. And we mentioned this 3x3 rule that I think is really nice to structure your content, and that, you know, it leaves you with freedom to do some amazing things in terms of data analysis, in terms of data visualization, and can be quite a lot of fun to write these papers. I've written dozens of these. I think I stopped counting beyond 70. So you can actually boost your CV quite nicely with it. Thanks so much.
Very good. Have a good day.
Have a nice day and talk to you soon. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and Casey for help with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.